Off the ball
on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
So we've got Eddie O'Sullivan here in studio. A rare treat for us, Eddie. You're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
And Brian O'Driscoll is here. So Ireland 38, South Africa 3. Our previous best record was 32 points to 15 back in 06. So this is an 18-point improvement on the margin. It's about five times in 13 years now Ireland have beaten South Africa. Eddie, in your piece today on the Times Online, you said this, over the 80 minutes, comparing Ireland to South Africa is like comparing CSI Miami to Keystone Cops.
Yeah. I thought they were awful, South Africa, you know. I don't want to start off in the best. We're taking that away from Ireland. How Ireland were excellent. Incredibly focused, very accurate in what they did. But at no point in the game did I think, oh, maybe South Africa are going to win this. There was no chance. And I think eventually the wheels came off because they coughed up 21 points in the last 10 minutes. You know, they just almost capitulated. And I think the problem at the moment, they have lots of problems, but the most simple problem is they're playing on emotion at the moment because they've been so unpredictable, their confidence is rattled. And it's what you saw in the Rugby Championship, you know, two wins, two draws, two losses. Mm. Among those losses, so New Zealand was a shellacking of 50 points. But then they run New Zealand to 1 point in the last game. So I wasn't sure which sort of South African team was coming to town this week. But I the team that didn't bring much energy or much emotion to the game, and Ireland were totally in control for the whole 80 minutes.
By the time Ireland were 9-0 up and once Conway got that try, Brian, I presume everyone's reaction was that this is done.
Yeah, it was. I agree with Eddie. I was sitting beside Dick Spring at the game and my wife, and I knew within 3 or 4 minutes that we weren't going to lose that game. You could just set the immediate tempo, just the way we played ourselves into the game, way we were able to build a score almost immediately.
Yeah.
And you just got the sense that there was no way. We're so organised now, and they seem so dishevelled. They are lacking massively in clarity of what they're trying to achieve. And
so what are the key things you see in those first 2-3 minutes where you look at them and realise this is not an organised team?
I think it's small things. There's a few points I suppose I want to make, and yeah. And not necessarily over the course of those 3 minutes you don't see it, but one thing that definitely became apparent for me is that their old game of, you know, confrontation and physicality, it worked for them, and then if it didn't work they gave it another 5 or 10%. That now they've got to rethink that, because for a number of reasons, size have worked them out, and maybe they don't quite have the players that they had 10 or 15 years ago. But from a second point of view, I think the new rules are affecting them, being their ability to be able to play like that. So now the fact that teams aren't committing any numbers to rooks, that there are more rooks. But if you send your big numbers around the corner, there's more in the defensive line these days. There might be one in the ruck. More bodies on feet, that means you're able to double team and triple team sides. And the tackling efficiency and technique of Ireland and good sides in the world these days are able to counteract huge, enormous ball carriers. You saw De Jager in the corner, Etzebeth and Steph De Toy. They were the three main carriers, maybe with Beast thrown in there as well, Matawira. Yeah. But if you look at it, we had their cards marked. We knew that they weren't going to pass. And it was a matter of identifying the tackler. And then the jam is the guy on the outside and the hustle is the guy on the inside. And they're all clearly able to decide when the ball is going to be carried to contact. And they join the tackler in the impact. He hits low, the two boys hit high, wrap it up, slow ruck, knock on effect, next phase. And they just offered so little beyond that.
So in layman's language, fewer at the rooks, meaning we can afford to double or triple team their big lad who's just going to run at us anyway.
And there's a reason that there's nothing in the ruck anymore for the defensive team. The problem is the tackler now has to swing around and go through the gate, which I know is quite technical. Before, the tackler used to be able to tackle it, and irrespective of what position he found himself on, he used to be able to get up and play the ball. That's gone. So he has to now buy himself time to swing around into the gate. Also, a ruck is now being formed with one player over the ball. It used to be two. So now the attacking team, once one man shows any effort to step over the ball, over the tackled player, that's a ruck, and you're not allowed to play that ball. So for those two reasons, sides are just fanning out, and they're putting another number in the backfield. They might put one tackler in. If there's a great opportunity, they'll try and pinch the ball, but that's when it's clear and obvious. But for the most part, they just let teams play and you trust your defensive system and you trust your discipline. You and we've gotten so good at that. We're letting teams play.
You can get off the line with those numbers as well. There's no sense you're trying to drift defend because you have so many guys in your feet. So you can get off the line much more aggressively. And then just think of the defence or two steps off the gain line. You make a third step, you're into the backfield. And now you have the collision there and it starts for them behind the gain line.
Okay, that's really interesting. I hadn't actually heard that point made. So we're now at a point for South Africa where giving it to the big lads isn't going to work the way it used to.
Well, I think they figured that out. But it's one thing to know that, it's another thing to fix it.
Okay.
And they don't look a team that's comfortable on the ball playing laterally. Like they've always, there's two ways into the bank vault. You can kick the door down or you can pick the lock. And they've always kicked the door down.
Mm.
And now they've got to pick the lock. They don't have the skill set for it. And we have to shut them down over recent years, Brian. That's been a focal point in every test against South Africa. Shut down the runners and they'll run out of ideas.
Yeah, and they can't afford to not pick these players in Europe now.
Yeah.
Like you look... I didn't know any of this back three. I have to say I was pretty impressed with Coetzee, their fullback. I thought he was their best player. He looked as though he was dangerous. He just got no help from anyone.
Yeah.
But he looked as though he could create something if given a little bit of space. But the two wingers were a non-event, I thought. Two centres, big units, but lacking a bit in skill set and decision making. I just think we had their number from early on. And you've got international rugby now, you've got to think your way around around victory.
Look at the two halfbacks, compare their halfbacks to our halfbacks, like Elton Janty's compared to Jonathan Sexton. You know, it's just a different class. He's head and shoulders above him in everything.
Mm.
And you've someone like Murray and Sexton running the game, like they're conducting an orchestra between them, and you have those boys running around with their hair on fire, trying to get him over the gain line. It's just men against boys in that department alone.
The Yanchis, you didn't know what he was going to do when he was getting the ball. So if you're passing the ball, you got to be flatter. If you're kicking the ball, fine, you can take a bit of depth so you don't get blocked down. When the ball was thrown to him, he was in the same position, massive depths, 7, 8, 9 metres away from the ruck in depth. And that invites a hard press.
Yeah.
If you want to stop the hard press, you play flat yourself because they can't continue charging. You have to patter your feet when you get to the point of being able to make a decision.
Yes.
But if someone plays deep in the pocket, you know you
can
just keep on charging.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get another 3-4 steps of line speed and there it becomes a territory game.
So, I mean, it sounds to me like these are real basics. I mean, you're spotting all this very quickly and, you know, you kind of understand now when you say they're a bit of a mess. That's a whole load of little things, very, very wrong, simple things.
The first half, their kicking strategy was insane. I don't know what they were at. And the worst one was, I think it was Damien Dallin had a 3-on-1 overlap and he just punted the ball downfield.
It's funny, on that one, I watched the game back and I saw on TV the boys analysing it as well. And it was a very poor kick.
Yeah.
But he had his hand forced as well. I thought it was brilliant defence from Robbie Henshaw. He played hard on the outside without committing to the second last man, so he still could have pushed off if a big loopy pass was thrown out to the winger.
Mm-hmm.
But he got in the eye line of Damien Delande and forced him into a poor decision, which he executed really poorly on top of it.
Mm.
So
Delande should have had the confidence, though.
He did,
to
but,
make
he,
a
but
player,
was, I have
but
to say, he should have thrown the pass still because Henshaw, you know,
he wasn't going
to commit to the second last man, but I thought it was very, very clever because he didn't commit one way or another, but he showed a big enough hand to encourage him to do something that maybe his initial decision
he
hadn't considered.
Where you left?
No, well, do you know, I texted Robbie yesterday and I said it to him. I said it was terrific. Terrific defence.
Interesting.
And
Shane Horgan said yesterday in the Sunday Times, he feels Robbie Henshaw, benchmarked against his early performances, has stagnated somewhat.
Yeah, I read that too, and it's rare enough that I actually disagree with Shane because he was the one on the analysis at halftime. And I know sometimes when you're doing analysis at halftime, you don't have the same clarity of being able to make a decision when you've got hours of analysis to do. But
he wrote it in the Sunday Times the next day.
So I disagree. I think Robbie had a super solid defensive game. He made one error later on in the game, and a bad pass allowed him to get back into the game. But other than that, I thought great contribution, always high energy, has an enormous engine. I think that's his number one trait.
Mm.
But it was one of those games where they both had to carry hard. You still have to carry over the advantage line. But I thought it was quality of pass for Conway to throw the missed pass out to Stockdale for his try.
Mm-hmm.
beautiful, you know, seamless, right out in front, didn't have to check his stride. And that's the difference between getting in the corner or someone making a corner tackle. So I think he did his basics extremely well, and Joe Schmidt will be happy with his overall performance.
Are we looking for more than the basics from Henshaw, Eddie?
I think we are, and I think he has it. I think he's a fantastic talent. The concern I had for him was that he was playing all his test rugby at 12 and he was carrying the ball an awful lot. So he was never finding himself in that outside channel where he had, you know, more options, either carry or pass. And the problem, I suppose, looking at the Leinster side of it, is if Harry Ringrose comes back, does he go back to 12 now? And, you know, how does that dynamics work?
I wonder, Eddie, does he go back to 15?
Yeah,
you know, he was a great 15. He's a great kicking game.
But he's played all his career at 15.
You know, he's very capable in the air. We've seen him. We saw that try he scored against England a few seasons ago, dominating the air. So I wonder if you have a full deck, do you get him in there? Because gives him an opportunity to play with ball in hand a little bit more.
About that is, like, to play a test rugby consistently in one position, you probably should play there most weeks with your club.
Unless you're super talented,
yeah.
But he's pretty talented.
It's a massive ask to ask a guy to suddenly go from one position to another, like if he's playing his club rugby consistently. Because there's nuances at test level that you need to be grappling with every week in your day-to-day to be comfortable on the ball. So, and I don't doubt he's that ability.
You can be sure that they're a bit frustrated that Joey Carberry's playing 15 for Leinster because he's the
backup 10.
Number 10. Totally. So they want him getting game time. So to that point, he's going to be Leinster's number 12. He's not going to be playing 15 for them.
Yeah.
But I just wonder with the calibre and, you know, there's some question marks about Rob Kearney. I thought he was, you know, reasonably good. He wasn't at his best.
Yeah.
But I think we need to try and put maximum pressure in multiple positions. And at the moment, with Zeebo out of the equation, he doesn't have a huge amount of pressure on him.
Yeah.
And I think that'll bring more out of him if you get him and maybe Jared Payne in there as well and all fighting for one position.
There is a vacuum behind Rob in the pecking order as to who is the next, with Zeebo or the loop, who's the next fullback in there. If Rob kind of went down the warm up, who'd be the guy you'd bring in? And there's question marks there. Joey Carberry could go in there. Robbie Henshaw is a really good suggestion.
Yeah, he's really capable of it. Yeah.
You know?
So tease out the midfield situation. If we, I mean, I was going to ask you this before the suggestion of Henshaw at 15, Eddie. But so is Bundiaki now a nailed down 12 for Ireland going forward?
I don't know if he's nailed it down. I think we got carried away on Saturday evening because he played a really solid game. He wasn't a 9 out of 10. I think he was a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Didn't make any mistakes, which is exactly what you want in your first cap. Gary Ringrose did the exact same in his first cap, came in really solid game. But I think because everyone was so wound up earlier in the week about the fact that he was eligible and shouldn't have been eligible, all that nonsense, people felt bad about it after the game when we won so well. And so I don't know, Bundiaki is definitely well able to play in that 12 slot. The question is, I think McCluskey has a say as well. I think McCluskey this year has been outstanding. But then can Henshaw go back? And we know he can. So I think, I wouldn't say at the moment that they're sitting down and saying, okay, this Bundiaki locked down at 12 for the next few years. I don't think it's like that. I think I think
McCluskey's a bit out of the mix on that.
Okay.
I think Henshaw and Bundy are definitely vying for the 12 jersey. I still think Gary Ringrose is the automatic choice at 13.
Okay.
I think he offers something that the other two don't. He has more X factor than the two of them. His game is very different to that. It's more in tune with a conventional outside breaking 13. I suppose it depends on how you want to play the game. Mm-hmm. But I think if you want someone to create something from nothing, I think you're most likely to get it from Gary Ringrose.
And so in your world, if it's Ringrose and Bundy, you're putting Henshaw at 15 to get him on the pitch.
Well, you get your best players on the pitch
and
your in-form players. So I thought Bundy was a very impressive first international for him. He was pumped. You could see it after that big hit on Ushuizen within a minute.
Yeah.
You know, big shout and clap to get himself going, G himself up. So I thought his defence was very good. He carried hard into a pretty physical defence.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'd made any errors in the game. So super solid starting performance. We'll see an evolution of his game at international as well. He wouldn't have wanted to throw too many 50-50s in a game like that in your first test. You just play basics extremely well, keep the coach on side, and then grow into your performances in the subsequent weeks and years. So I think we're in a great spot. Just on McCluskey, I think the problem with him is that he's become a bit one-dimensional. I think if you force his hand, and you show, as Robbie Henshaw did in the international at the weekend, if you show him that there's a, you might be closing the space on the outside, he'll tuck and run every time. And if you have a good, proficient chop tackler, you still have to tackle him because he's a unit.
He's a huge unit, and
he's got a nice offloading game. But I think you have to have more at international level.
I think he's a twelve. He's a really, really hard line inside running 12 with good offloading skills. Which this year, to be, I think he's brought his game to another level with Ulster this year. He's been the difference with Ulster winning and losing games this year. And I, you know, his ability to get his hands free in a tackle is colossal. And I think he's a guy that, he got his first cap 2 years ago in Twickenham, and I thought he hit a really solid first cap, and he never got back in again. I think he's not as far outside it, and because there are good options there. But I wouldn't kick him out of the tent.
I'm asking the best man. That coaches have preferable players.
Totally,
for,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's something that you get the sense that Joe Schmidt is not as big a fan of Stuart McCluskey as he is of the other boys.
He's not a big fan.
And whether it's
reeled him ashore
an attitude thing or a, you know, playing ability point of view, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's definitely something in it that... the other, lots of other players get a preference before him.
Yes, absolutely. That's the coach's view on it, which is fair enough. Every coach has his own vision of what he wants. But I just think that there's plenty of possibilities. There's plenty of options now in the midfield.
Yeah.
If everybody was fit in the morning, you'd have a great discussion as to, you know, what's your midfield.
If everyone's fit in the morning, what's your midfield?
If everyone's fit in the morning, I agree. I think Ringrose. At 13, Sexton at 10, and 12. I personally think I'd still stick with Robbie Henshaw. That'd be my perfect midfield.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that at the moment, but it would be dependent on form elsewhere. Yeah, and I am a big believer of getting your best players into the team and your in-form players. And if you had a Rob Kearney not in the form of his life, you know, over the next few months, I think you could look at a viable option of Henshaw at 15
or Payne at 15.
I think it's very difficult to see Robbie Henshaw not in Ireland starting 15.
Totally, yeah.
Okay.
To me, Brian says he's a key guy because he's so consistent. He doesn't make mistakes, and I think his own confidence around the team spreads to everybody else.
How good is Jacob Stockdale? I mean, is he good enough to be the guy who's going to be on the wing starting for Ireland for the guts of the next decade?
Well, decade's a long time in rugby, but I think
5 years.
This year he's lit it up. He's very young.
Be pedantic with me.
If he keeps going where he is. Yeah, he got everything. He's played fullback as well. He's played centre. He's a footballer. So you rarely get somebody who's with his ability on the wing that can go into other positions. That's a genuine winger, but by the way, could drop to fullback or drop to the centre. We know Zeebo can play wing or fullback, but you wouldn't certainly put Zeebo in the centre. So I think Stockdale has that football ability, but he's an incredibly big man and he's quick. He's got everything at the moment, you know.
I think he's got lots of natural ability. Yeah. You can see it. He's a footballer. You can see it in his kick game. I wondered about that, but you can see even the way someone drops a ball onto their foot, whether it's comfortable, whether it's a learned skill or whether it's a natural skill. You can tell it's a natural skill with him. He doesn't think twice about it. He sized up a counter-attack at one stage relatively early on and then put up a bomb and tried to get up and compete himself for it. You saw that pass for Conway. Eventually, did it lead to his own score? Certainly a good inroads into the 22. Oh, sorry, it was... it was a Reese Ruddock try. That was the try. Yeah. So didn't even think about it. Fraction high, but Conway's not a big man. Mm-hmm. We'll give him a break on that.
But he had the pace to beat the cover.
Yeah, he didn't even have to think. He didn't slow down. Yeah. He just threw, a beautifully timed 10-meter pass. It's a guy with a lot of talent who's got a lot of confidence at the minute.
But he hit the line perfectly. And then he's just slipped outside the cover. And then he threw the key pass. Like, that's three pieces of phenomenal skill, one after another, you know?
Mm. One last player I wanted to ask about was Keane Healy. Is he now approaching Keane Healy at his best territory again here?
He looks good, doesn't he?
He looks in great shape. As long as he's happy with his weight that he hasn't trimmed on because someone told him he should be lighter, because props are a different animal. They're like wrestlers or boxers. They have a fighting weight. Now, he's trimmed himself down. He seemed to have a lot of energy, a lot of carries. And maybe before, he was focused more on his bulk and that took away from his capacity to get around the field. But he seems to have the bit between his teeth again. But I think it's also symptomatic of the competition of the team and that, you know, you get maybe one chance to make a good impression and then somebody else comes in, you mightn't see it again.
There's one other factor. He can catch again. His hand has been in really bad shape for the last year or 18 months.
Mm.
Going back to the World Cup, there was talk of would he be able to continue playing. I saw his dad at half time and we were chatting about it, and like there's no doubt a confidence comes with being injury free as well. And he was massively inhibited with that injury, so that seems to have subsided and he looks as though he's playing some of the best rugby of his life. What I loved, a good few occasions, he identified early on our ball carriers, on Henderson in particular, he'd be second man in, literally giving an extra nudge into the carry to add extra ballast. He identified when there was no tip on option. It was like, right, I got to latch onto him and carry and let my weight be added to his.
That,
and
that
got us got us over the advantage line. It gets you a meter, another meter and a half, but that's the difference on a team being on their toes and on their heels. And he did that a good few times.
So are there any negatives? I mean, are you watching a good chunk of the second half, Eddie, where it's at 3 points apiece for most of that second half, thinking, well, really, we should be looking to absolutely put a team like this to the sword, or was it fine?
It wasn't so attractive, but I wasn't overly concerned, because I think at that time, South Africa were trying to hold on to the ball, and any time we got it back was deep in our own third, because they were dominating possession and dominating territory, and they were trying to hold on to it, all of it very ineffectively. But yeah, you'd like to think that maybe we could have maybe worked ourselves into some better positions in that, you know, that first 30 minutes of the second half and get more opportunities to really cut them to shreds. Because, yeah, we scored 21 points in 10 minutes. Had we, for some reason, not hit the straps in those last 10 minutes, we'd probably be looking back and saying, you know, we dominated, but we didn't put them away. But it's hard to criticise them when the opportunities arose at the end. They had all the energy on the field. I mean, the three tries were like top drawer. Like, one was from a set play. The second one was from put on the corner, build them all, walk them into the end goal. And the third one was, we turn over a ball, hit two rucks, cross kick, and then strip him on the other wing. Like, you can't criticise that rugby. Like, we just waited for the last 10 minutes to do it. Had those three tries been spread over 10 or 15 minutes apart, it wouldn't even be a discussion.
There's a lot to be said for breaking, you know, it takes time to break teams down as well. And when then a bench comes on and they're fresh, and you need to work them down as well. So I thought our bench were very impressive. And there was question marks about some of the names when you look comparatively of the two. And I thought you got two try scorers. Rhys Ruddock's feat for his try was absolutely beautiful.
I'm so happy for Rhys Ruddock. I think he's one of the best rugby players in the country for a number of years, but there's so much of logjam in that back five.
Well, I don't even need to ask you about Peter O'Mahony, Sean O'Brien, CJ Stander, because I know they were all good.
Yeah, they're all outstanding.
So, I mean
like, when you consider that when Rhys Ruddock came on pretty early in the second half for, you know, Peter O'Mahony, you're thinking, like, this is a big pair of shoes to fill. But by God, did he fill him. But he's been outstanding for Leinster. The thing about Ruddock that really attracts me is that he's understated in terms of, you don't seem, like, his try was outstanding, but he doesn't do that every week. But it's all the continuous, the big tackles, the big carries, the big cleanups. He's just a workhorse. He gets through a ton of work. And if you have three or four guys doing that, then everybody's job gets a lot easier. But he's been consistently doing that. So I'm just delighted for him to get, he gets the opportunity and he nails it down.
So it's Fiji next for Ireland. It's kind of, certainly in comparison with last year, it feels slightly flat this November series, because we've just beaten supposedly the big scalp with total ease. The next two games, grand. You just want to get this thing moving into spring quickly. Like, yeah, it's a bit flat.
The atmosphere wasn't great at the weekend.
Well, we knew we'd win after 6-0.
Yeah, it was.
After 3 minutes, you were done.
There wasn't much of a buzz around.
I haven't been to a game other than Soldier Field. I haven't been to a game in the Aviva just as a supporter. I've gone in a work capacity. I haven't been there for 6 or 7 years.
Well, I was at the French game last year in the Six Nations, and that had a similar feel to South Africa at the weekend, in that there was a sense, we're going to win here.
Yeah.
I don't really need to get behind the lads as they go after this kick chase kind of feeling.
Yeah, and I don't know who's at blame.
It's because we're good. We're fourth in the world.
Are people saying the players are at blame that they're not entertaining us enough? You know, winning's not good enough anymore.
But remember when that first win over South Africa more than a couple of Novembers ago now? But it was a huge thing. It was electric, and now it's 5 times in 13 years.
We hadn't done it for a while, so that adds a bit of jazz to it. And like, they were regarded at that time now as a world power. I don't think you'd call them a world power now, even though they're still high up the rankings.
Yeah.
They've lost their way as a kind of a rugby nation. They're not, no one really fears them anymore. And we've nothing to fear, but like, this is the fifth out of
13 years.
Fifth out of seven in Dublin. And I think it's 6 out of 10 in total. Mm. You know, like we've got the balance of power here when it comes to South Africa.
One caveat is come World Cup year, all bets are off and they can bring back everyone. So it's a different South Africa.
It just changes for sure. But, you know, you've got to deal with what's in front of you at the moment. But so, in the Fiji question, bizarre, bizarre trivia, Fiji are ranked above Argentina this morning in the world rankings.
Really, yeah?
Yeah, they're 9, I think Argentina are 10. Those world rankings, I had a look at them, they're just a bit of a joke shop, actually. You know, I think it's crazy. But having said that, like Fiji, they have a very good coach, John McKee. You know, he's former Buccaneers, former Connacht. Really smart guy. And I think he'll have a good game plan. Whether they'll stick to it is another question. But they're a dangerous team. If they hit the straps, they can cause problems for you. And the question is then, does Ireland want to roll the dice here, get some more guys in there? You know, I think he has to do that in terms of the squad. This is a really good opportunity for him.
Yeah.
So it's hard one to talk about because you don't know what team Ireland are going to pick. I'm not sure what team Fiji will show up with.
Does Bundy play again this weekend?
Well, I think, he does probably get another game under his belt. I think it's not maybe the worst thing for him now is to sit out another game. I think he'd be jumping out of his socks to get him out there. But, you know, do you play Robbie Henshaw along with him? You know, or do you go to Niall Scannell in Munster? Give him a run. He's been outstanding for Munster.
You mentioned Scannell a few times now. You're a big Scannell
fan. The problem for Scannell, I think, in Munster is tucking him in at 12. I think he's a much better 13.
Do you think?
I do, yeah. I think they've got that wrong. I think Farrell is more of a 12 than a 13. Mm. I'd have flipped him. Because if you see all the good moments on Munster's back line, it's Scannell is in the middle of it. He's offloads.
Again, I think it's what you're looking for in your team. Mm. Like, he doesn't have terrific footwork, but God, he's got a big arse on him. And you look at him and you think he's not that big, and then I saw him the semi-final of Europe last year, and he's got a lot of size to get him over the advantage line. But he's got a nice passing game. It's just I don't think again he's a conventional 13 from how I see. Yeah. I've seen 13.
Well, in the Munster context,
there's lots of different variety to them. You know? So if you want to play a lot off second receiver, I think he's good there. But he also gets you over the advantage line. But you're not going to get an outside break from him like you will other players.
I think he's done particularly well for Munster. He's been the epicentre of a lot of their good back play.
Mm.
And I think he's a guy I think is underrated myself. Mm. I mean, just from what I've seen from him, I think he's been probably himself and Zeebo have been the best backs in Munster for the past 18 months in terms of making things happen. So, you know, maybe he gets a shot, I don't know. But we're projecting what... And as Brian says, look, every coach has his own vision of what he wants and what he's looking for in a player.
Yeah.
Might not happen, but does Robbie Henshaw play this week again? If he doesn't, who plays there, you know?
Mm.
And I think, you know, I think give Robbie a break this week.
Yeah, but he's only had a couple of games. Yeah. He only came back in the Munster game, so he hasn't... Yeah, he came in
late.
He had
a pectoral injury for the whole early part of the season.
Yeah. Wales were beaten by Australia again, 29 points to 21. France lost New Zealand, 38 points to 18. Eddie, I know you caught a bit of England's 21 win to 8 over Argentina. Anything from that game with Six Nations vaguely on the horizon and Argentina coming up?
I think England would be disappointed that they were lucky. They got a yellow card. Argentina got a yellow card for a challenge and a high ball, which was ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, Brown fell badly, but it wasn't the Argentina's fault. Like, I mean, it's getting to the point now that if two guys jump and one fella gets hurt, the other gets a yellow card. But that was one of those calls. And yeah, England scored a crucial try through Hughes at that time. But outside of that, you could see they're trying to do stuff, but it's not sticking in terms of they're not throwing the ball in the ground, they're not fixing defences. And Argentina worked very hard and really got in their faces as they do.
Mm.
Didn't bring much to the party other than the fullback.
Hernandez.
He had a shocker off the ground. He missed 3 or 4 really kicked for penalties. So if without the yellow card and they kick their penalties, it's a toss of a coin.
Mm.
And it goes back to England's attacking game isn't firing. Defensively, they're outstanding. Their set piece is magnificent. When they carry direct, they get over the gain line. They recycle well. Their cleanouts. It's the one part of their game they're not able to unpick the opposition.
Mm.
And they're trying. They're not just doing silly stuff. They're actually trying to make plays. But that accuracy... that precision that does unlock international defences isn't there for them.
And that's
the big talk at the moment.
Is it?
Like, and England at the moment, the funny thing, they keep talking about the World Cup. Like, there's nothing happening in between. Like, a couple of Six Nations, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
But their attacking game is kind of stagnant, which surprises me because Eddie Jones is a very smart operator.
Yeah, you think
are they buying themselves time? Sorry, Joe.
Go on.
Yeah, are they buying themselves time in talking about the World Cup that they're a work in progress, so almost be patient with them.
There's a bit of that going on, but the evidence has to be that you'd like to see them, if they're really World Cup contenders, looking like a team that can tear up the top teams. Like you're going to have to beat a New Zealand. You're going to have to beat maybe an Australia. I think Australia's attack game, it's pretty attritional at the moment, but then they have that moment after four or five rucks where someone pulls a rabbit out of a hat and you're wondering what happened. Like, they have that capacity and they have the players for it. England don't seem to have that. It's almost a predictable attack that if you just work hard enough, you can shut them down and you're physical enough. And I think they're a little bit worried about that. There's no real progression in that area, which, to the context of winning the World Cup, they're going to have to find a way of being more inventive and being more accurate.
So with the trip to Twickenham coming up for Ireland next spring, that's not such a scary prospect. Attack is more difficult to sort out.
The problem with them
is
they can choke the life out of you without cutting you to pieces.
So they could beat us 9-6.
It's very hard to break them down unless you're very smart. Like, if you go narrow against them, they'll just eat you up and spit you out.
They do like Ireland did at the weekend. You know, 3-6-9, and they get a try, and game's over.
Yeah,
you know, that's it's the Munster way of old. That's what they used to choke teams.
England did that with
grind
years,
them down.
Years
yeah.
with Johnny Wilkinson, like, you go 3-0, you go, oh, not so bad, 6-0, I don't worry. Then you're 9-0, and then they get a try, and you're going 16-0. That's kind of, how do we get back from here?
Yeah, and then you have to chase it too. Then you're chasing it a bit more. Yeah. You make a few errors, and then all of a sudden, it's
tough to play. They do that too.
30 or 40, yeah.
Okay, lads, great stuff. Eddie, Brian, thanks a million.
Cheers.
Cheers, Joe.
Off the Ball on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.